What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Hardcore Troubadour. My name is Brian Wallace.
My name is Tyler Short, and we got a guest today, my friend Zane Pugh from Zane, are you still in San Antonio?
Oh yeah, we're still in San Antonio.
Okay.
Hey man, so y'all are relatively close to the floods. How has it been?
Oh yeah, no, we're
Yeah.
like 45 minutes. It's been
Oh,
pretty
dang.
crap. It's been good. I mean, it's been raining a shit ton here, but
Yeah.
it's been bad. It's bad out there. Like, we have a bunch of friends who went over and like volunteered, and they've been sending pictures, and it looks crazy.
Yeah, I
Damn.
mean, it seems that this is becoming a
Right.
habit of us talking to somebody around the weeks that they suffer a natural disaster.
Yeah.
My buddy Nate was one of our last guests, and like the week after he recorded with us, his house was taken by the Ohio River.
Oh my God.
Yeah, pretty
It's
rough,
the
but.
hardcore troubadour kiss of death.
But
Uh-oh.
it happened to you before you came on here,
That's
so you're
true.
fine.
Yeah. We got it out of
Okay.
the way early this time.
Yeah, we can't be blamed. Well, man, I'm glad you and your family are okay, but yeah, that shit's awful.
Yeah, I honestly didn't even know. Like, I knew it hit Texas. I had no idea how close San Antonio was to where it happened because I just haven't been
Yeah,
online
Texas
very
is so
much
big
lately.
too, so it's just
Yeah.
like you have no idea where anything really is in these little towns. They're like little towns too.
God, yeah, it's so awful. I don't know. I also like the I don't know if you guys heard that Ted Cruz was in Greece when this happened as
Oh yeah.
well.
Of course he
Of
was.
course
Of course he is. Of course he is. That's what he likes to do.
I feel like he like as much as it sucks to have him around, I feel like he's the only thing like scaring the specter of death off of Texas.
God, right? Said if he was here, it'd probably be worse.
That's true. Oh
Oh,
my
he'd have
God.
to answer for something. But yeah. Well, yeah, Zane. So we got you on here to do our record club thing that we do with hardcore friends who also like country music. And to get into it, when did you start to find an affinity for this kind of music, like folk and country and like Americana stuff? Was
So it
this
was
like
like
before hardcore, I'm
a
assuming?
little bit, a little bit. So when I was younger, my grandma was like, there's only two kinds of music. There's country and there's Western. So I spent a lot of time with her when I was younger, so I would just be forced to listen to it almost. But yeah, I've liked it for a while. Then obviously there's like the phase where you're like, no, I can only like hardcore.
Yes.
I cannot like country right now. And then later on, I kind of just was like, you know what? I like what I like. So
When did you get into hardcore?
hardcore, probably around like the summer in between 7th and 8th grade. We were like skateboarding a bunch, and our friend's brother would always, he'd always have cool CDs. We'd always be like, oh yeah, let's listen to this. We didn't really know what it was at the time, but yeah.
What were like the intro bands for you? Just to get a read,
Honestly,
was
the
it?
first one was probably like Terror.
Oh,
Like
okay.
he was obsessed with like metalcore, and he would always
Okay.
get those like Trust Kill Eulogy samplers, and he'd be like, you can just have them. So he would just listen to those most of the time. So it was like Terror. I'm trying to think, like Kids Like Us was another band that was on
Okay.
those samplers that you're just like, oh, what is this? This is cool. Yeah.
Dude, I to that point, like I think younger kids don't really understand how important samplers and comps were.
No, dude.
You know,
Yes,
when that was my intro to so many bands. And I mean, like,
even like the Victory ones, stuff like
dude,
that, where you're like,
Victory Style 2 was the
yeah.
one for me because I
Yes.
was like, you
Before
know.
downloading, like that was like the best way you could get a bunch of music for
Oh yeah,
free.
for sure.
Absolutely. I had to, it was a cassette and I had Buried Alive, Earth Crisis, like, you know, so then I would save up to actually like buy the
Bye.
albums, you know,
Yeah.
but just wearing out those tapes. Also, Zane, it is amazing, like literally everybody we've talked to here, and I'm not surprised, all had this sort of like, I love country music. Wait, I'm too fucking punk for country. And then you turn around and go, what the fuck was I thinking? This still
Yeah,
rules. No,
exactly.
like I think all of us have had that progression over time.
Yes.
And Zane is one of the first people, like when I was starting to, I think like not get bored with hardcore, but like realize like, man, I can still listen to like Neil Young and Bob Dylan and things like that. Zane was the first person I ever saw repping like popular country shirts. like
Oh
on
yeah, they
stage.
all
Like
had good ones too. Like Garth, I would always wear Garth Brooks shirts.
I
Garth
think
shirts.
it was the year, one of the years you played Sound and Fury, I think you were wearing a Garth Brooks shirt.
Oh yeah.
And I remember seeing that and being like, damn,
Yeah, and
yeah, okay. I should probably feel more comfortable listening to music that doesn't fit.
I remember wearing that, and people were like, "What the fuck are you wearing? You don't really like that." I was like, "Well, I do,
I
unfortunately."
do. Yeah, and I think that that's like that era of hardcore, like the, I guess that was like the 20, early 20 teens, maybe like
Yeah, like
2012, 2013, around there.
love that.
That was when I really think a lot, and it's kind of similar, I think, to that. I mean, like what, 10 years prior, when American Nightmare would wear Joy Division shirts, and all of a sudden, like listening to the Smiths and Morrissey became like an acceptable thing in hardcore. Yeah, I think that like we like this is this does make a lot more sense now when I look back, like 10 years ago, and I'm like, oh, there was a lot of things that made me start feeling more comfortable listening to this kind of music that my dad liked, and not just like rejecting everything that I heard before I got into hardcore. And yeah, that Garth Brooks shirt was one of those things. That's
Yeah, I
awesome.
remember I wore that to in when we went the first time to Europe. I think it was like 2012, something like that. And then we played with this band. One of the people now is in Hi-Viz, and he was like, "Dude, that Garth Brooks shirt." He was like, "We love country," and I was like, "Really? Like, dang,
That's
I hadn't heard. Like, I've never met someone who was like, I love Garth Brooks." So I was like, "Oh
dude.
shit,
I mean,
okay."
we love O Oasis over here, so I guess it does go both ways,
I mean, that's
right?
that they're like comparable just in terms of like who else would have that many like hundreds of thousands of people like in a public park showing up, for a gig. Like, yeah, it was a phenomenon. That's awesome.
So when it comes to like stuff that your grandma was forcing on you, what were the first things that you like kind of had a taste for, even if it wasn't your choice?
Honestly, that was one of the reasons why I picked that Alan Jackson CD, because that Alan Jackson was her literal favorite, and we would listen to that all the time. And it was just like, oh my gosh, like again, we're listening to it again. But yeah, I mean, it was a shit. I still listen to it today,
I was
so.
gonna say, and now I'm sure it has like this whole other connection, man. I spent a lot of time with my grandparents as a kid, and I wish they had pushed more music on me, because now I have a bunch of records that belonged to my grandma when she was like younger. I have like all of her Waylon Jennings records, and
Oh.
like a few other things that like she passed to my dad, and then now they've passed to me. And I'm like, man, we were just playing like cards. We could have had that playing in the background. Like, I wouldn't have been mad about it, I don't think at all. I was pretty
Dude.
open-minded when it came to music as a child.
You know what? That's you mentioning that a few years ago when my grandmother passed, we were going through all her stuff. She had a bunch of original, I mean, I have them now, a bunch of original Stax Records 45s,
That's so cool.
Otis Redding, the Barclays, stuff like that. And again, like, I love that music. Like, I think she had this stuff just having like grown up in Memphis, but it's like we never talked about it to that point, and that's something I think we really could have shared. But I didn't really find out how much she loved it until after she was gone.
Yeah, I think I feel like incredibly blessed that like one of the me and my dad's like bonding things is music right now. So like there, and we don't really leave any stones n not overturned, so like there's gonna be very few things that I find when he's gone that I'm like, man, I wish we had talked about this. Like we've been looking for new things to talk about, like, so I don't know. Were your parents much of an influence on your music as well, or just
Yeah, they honestly, my parents, when I was growing up, they're from, like, my mom is, they were both in the Air Force, but they were both lived in Florida when they met, and they were obsessed with Jimmy Buffett. So that was one thing.
Okay.
Another thing where I was like, at the time, I was like, dude, turn this shit off. But now, like looking back, I'm like, hey, there was some there. He has hits. He has
My
hits.
dad was my dad was like a casual parrot head as before I was born. They would go down to Gulf Shores a lot, and they would yeah, so they were in that scene a little bit.
I mean, to be fair, isn't being a parrot head all about being casual
I
now?
guess, yeah, you're right.
Very casual.
Supremely casual. Was that really so was that the crux of what they were into, like that kind of.
I mean, my mom pretty much like that. She really, she, that's what she would listen to a lot. She still listens to him a lot. My dad was more of like a, like not like heavy metal, but like rock, like AC/DC, stuff like that. Kind of like just 80s, 90s rock, stuff like that.
Cool. How old were your parents when you were born, do you know?
Think they were like 33. They're both
Okay.
older. They were both in the Air Force at the time. So just kind of,
So they had kind of
was
like
that?
established themselves and who they were before you popped on the scene. Okay.
And so did you, I mean, Air Force, did you grow up in San Antonio then? Is that where
No,
you?
honestly,
No.
I lived in like, well, I lived in like Germany, Washington, D.C., Florida, Massachusetts, and then came to Texas. Got it.
Gotcha. Where were you born?
Germany.
Germany? Okay.
Yeah.
How old were you when you left Germany?
I think I was like one or two. I don't
Okay.
remember
You
anything
don't
from
remember
there.
anything? Yeah.
Tyler, he's a U.S. citizen, all right? Relax. Okay.
I just want to make sure he's safe, you know? A
Oh,
lot of things are happening in this country
no.
right now. Oh
Man.
man.
Well, one th I mean we've made references, you know, Zane, to, you know, your band's performing Sound and Fury Europe, but for listeners that don't know, I mean, tell us about your music, tell us about, you know, sort of your pedigree. When did you first start not just listening to hardcore, but actually like being in bands?
So the first, I mean, honestly, I've only really been in one band. It was called Hardside. It was
Hardside's your only band?
Dude,
Yeah.
you came out fucking swinging. I didn't
That is
realize that was
crazy.
your only
One and
band.
done. One and done. But
Well,
no, so we actually started like right after Sound and Fury in 2009, and because we all, a bunch of us were out there from San Antonio, and we were like, man, this shit is badass. Like, we need to play with, like, honestly, it was just like, that would be so cool to play something like this. And then, yeah, I mean, we just kind of came back, just wrote some stuff. And honestly, one of the main reasons, because there was like no, besides Bitter End at the time, there was like
no
Lion
Texas
Wait,
bands.
there was a couple local bands, but they were always needing local bands to play. So we were just like, well, you know what, why don't we just start a band and we can play, because we're going to be at all these shows anyway. So that was kind of the main thing. We were our main like objective at the time, like, why not?
And 09 is Power Trip isn't really going yet either,
They I think they
right?
we both started like
At the
right
same
around
time. Okay.
that time.
Because Iron Age had kind of completely slowed down. They were only doing like a
They
few
would
shows a
play, but
year.
it would be like, yeah, two or three shows a year. Would be like one in Austin, one in Houston, Dallas, like something like that. But it was like a special occasion anytime they got to play.
So Bitter End really was the only like relevant hardcore band from Texas before you all and Power Trip kind of popped on
Yeah,
the scene.
there were some other ones, but those were like the main, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Those were
I
well.
remember Lion Weight, but Lion Weight like hardly ever made it out of the South. Like I would see them in Nashville every now and then.
But
Who
yeah,
did
that was.
I used to put Will to Live from Houston? Oh
Yeah,
yeah.
I
Will
used to,
to Live.
yeah, I
Yeah.
remember
But again,
them.
that Will to Live would, I mean, I would only ever see them on shows in the South.
Yeah,
Like
they're one of the main, like they're still a tech, they still play in Texas, but yeah, I feel like it's very rare that even they play, and when they do, it's normally in Texas.
Man, that's crazy. Who played Sound and Fury the year you all went and were inspired to
I think
start up
the
the
it was
band?
the year it was like Trapped Under Ice, and then it was a year Trash Talk played in that U-Haul.
Okay, all right.
The
Was that the
great.
year somebody rode a fucking motorcycle inside? No,
No, that was
no.
the next year.
That
That
was
was
the
the
next
next
year.
year.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that
Yeah.
was the that I'm trying to think though both of those years were in different venues, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, no, I think the one we went to the first time was in Oxnard, and then the next year was the motorcycle year.
That
Got it.
wasn't the year Floor Punch played, the year that you
It
went
might have been.
before.
Floor Punch played one of the years. I went to a bunch of them because I think the next year, the drummer of Hard Side was also the drummer of Bitter End, and he was like, "Hey, I can't. They're touring out there, and I can't tour. But like, if you drive, I'll pay for gas if you take me." And I was like, "Yeah, let's do it." So we just like drove out there with him, and yeah, that was. I think that was the motorcycle year, honestly, because I remember leaving early, and we were just like, "Damn, what do we do now?"
Oh man, that dude, thinking about chaos moments, I had completely forgotten. One of my buddies from Pennsylvania was in town, and we were all telling hardcore stories, and I forgot that you all played the show in Louisville when there was that huge
Oh,
altercation
yeah,
outside.
and it went inside, right?
Well, it was almost way worse. So Brian, this is a crazy story. So my lifelong best friend Jim Barron, and his fiance at the time got in an argument because they were too drunk at the show. The sun was still out.
It was on
And
that day too, I think.
yeah, you're right. And so Jim like went storming out of the show, and I, like an idiot, went after him to like make sure he was okay, because he was clearly like, way too intoxicated. He doesn't drink anymore, I think, possibly because of this day. But I find him in the alleyway. The show is at Keswick Democratic Club, which is in like Germantown-ish Louisville. Not a great neighborhood, but not the worst neighborhood either. And while we're in the alleyway and I'm trying to talk to him, a car pulls up and like honks their horn at us because we're kind of in the way. So I try to motion Jim aside. Jim yells "fuck you" at the car and gives him the finger. So then they try to hit me with their
What?
car, and I ended up jumping like in the air, and they drove like underneath of where I was standing. So they would have just
Jesus
hit me into the
Christ.
wall if I didn't jump. And I landed on their car, and then the girl yelled at me and said, "So now you're kicking my car." And I looked at her and I said, "Really?" And then Jim's fiance came outside, still drunk, started arguing with these girls. One of them was pregnant. Steph ended up flicking her cigarette into one of the girls' faces, and it exploded, which is still one of the hardest things I've ever seen in my life. One of them tried to swing a small Louisville Slugger bat at Jim, and I just grabbed it out of their hand and threw it into the railroad tracks. And I get Jim and Steph away from these girls. We get back into the venue, and then fast forward, Bitter End is playing.
Yeah, and it just came inside. I remember
Some
that.
guy walks in the back door, like says something to Mo. He's the one,
Yeah.
finger of two witnesses, standing closest to the back door. Mo can't really hear him. This is big guy. This big guy, like
It was
Damien,
a big motherfucker. I remember
like
that. Yeah.
Damien from Fucked Up size man. Like looks at him, says something to him. Mo like leans in, and he just sucker punches Mo in the face as hard as he can, and then runs outside. So everybody spills out of the show to find like 30 or 40 people waiting outside. All of them certainly not ready to fight. Some of them definitely just from the neighborhood, ready to watch a fight. What they don't expect is for 60 people to come spilling out of the show, ready to fight.
Pick the wrong show, friends.
And eventually, like, it gets kind of diffused, and I'm like, I kind of get between everybody. I'm like trying to get everybody to chill out, and there's like kids with bricks, kids with pipes, like everyone's kind of ready for it to go down. And then the neighborhood kind of realizes they don't want it. Like, I remember Daniel and like Jacob come outside too, and it's like, well, nobody really wants it. And then as they're retreating, they start picking up the rocks from the railroad like tracks and just chucking them at people. And one of them like whizzed past my head and almost hit me in the back of the head. Everybody went back in, Bitter End finished playing. It was awesome.
Yeah,
But I forgot you were there.
that was fucking crazy too. I remember that shit. That was like,
I forgot you guys and Take Offense played that show.
dude.
So
It was wild.
I have
I
so
remember
many questions. if that fight had broke out, it would have been on the news.
Oh, dude, it was because everyone was ready at the show.
Everyone was
Oh,
ready.
I'm sure.
It would
That's
have been
when I
on the
was.
news.
Yeah, I
No.
was like 20, and I was fucking crazy then too. And I
Yeah.
was like, "Fuck yeah, fight! Let's do this shit!" Like, I was fucking ready for it too.
Mean, it speaks to so much. One, I just want to go back to the original altercation. she just happened to have a Louisville Slugger, right? Like that's
Yeah,
pretty.
people
That's
keep
happened.
those in their car.
I was about,
Those
is that, do
they're
they just,
tiny
do
bat.
they, do they give you one like with the birth of every child at a hospital in Louisville? Like that's, you have your standard issue.
You see, you say that, but every kid goes on a field trip to the Louisville
To
Slugger
the,
Museum
yeah.
and gets one of those little
Which
bats.
is what I'm, when I, next time I come to Louisville, I would like to do the same.
There's one in this house somewhere.
Of course, as there
There's one in
should
this house
be.
somewhere, and then I also have a full-size Louisville Slugger that has my name on it and the inclination record because Peter had those made for us for
Oh, that's
a
really
present.
sweet.
It was very
The other thing
thoughtful.
I'd like to point out too is like, of course, someone in that ratchet ass car was pregnant, going
Pregnant, yes.
around
It had to
doing
be.
insane shit like
The
that.
girl trying to start the fight was pregnant.
Of course. Yeah.
Of course.
Awesome. There you go.
It was great.
Yeah.
But like very pregnant too. Like she didn't say I'm pregnant. I looked at her and said, she's pregnant. Was tough. It was pretty nuts. But yeah, no, dude, hardcore at that time was so wild. Like I feel like we just don't have that.
No, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I remember that tour every, I'm pretty sure there's a fight, like a crazy almost like brawl every night too. 'Cause I remember something happened in Cleveland, like it was like the same thing where you're just like, oh shit, what's about to happen here? Like, here
And
we
yet,
go.
it's always with certain, in certain towns with certain venues tend to attract a lot of weird civilian violence too, right? Like people just around that happen on it that aren't quite sure what's going on, but can sense the energy and misread what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I remember having to throw people out of Chestnut House all the time because we'd have looky loos who would just like walk in while a band was playing and shit would be going crazy. And we would just have to like grab them and just like get them out of there. Like,
Yeah,
because.
I remember a dude coming in and just like throwing somebody's like amp on the ground, and like being, when we like kicked his ass out of there, him like being truly like shocked.
Confused.
He was like, but
Why are you getting thrown
I thought
out?
we were breaking shit, man. What's up? I thought this, like, yeah, he was genuinely confused.
Yeah, that's I like looking back, like that may have been like one of the last shows that happened at that venue for like a long while till like Knocked Loose started doing some shows there. And part of me kind of like thinks there's like maybe the fight should have just happened. We didn't use that venue for very much longer after that. Like it maybe would have been a really great story, and we would have probably been on the news for it. That would have been interesting.
It's still a pretty good story, even without it being devolving into a full-on riot,
Yeah,
so.
I often think about like what that rock would have done if it hit me in the head because it
Oh
was
God, right.
huge. It was like a brick like whipped past my head.
That would have been rough, but I think in the years since, you've probably done much worse to yourself,
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
compounded. So, but anyway, country music.
Country music, yeah.
What, so Zane, like, while you're doing hard side, like, did any of your bandmates, were they also into country folk or yeah?
Our guitar player Patrick, he was definitely into it. We would listen to it together, kind of when we were driving almost, just to like. You're like when you're like after a show, you're like, I've had enough hardcore for the
Anything else? Anything else?
anything, exactly. It's
And there,
perfect for those late drives, man.
I know. Then we had some people who would be like, "All right, time to put the headphones on. We don't want to listen to this." So yeah.
That's me every single time I drive any of my bands is I put music on and everyone's headphones go in and I'm like, "Cool, I didn't want to talk to you guys either. Thanks." It's either sleep or headphones. That's the immediate response to me driving every time, which in inclination, I'm usually doing the overnight drive. So I guess that I'm not that offended. I still can remember the last time I was in Texas, Isaac fell asleep sitting shotgun as he always does. And I couldn't, his phone locked and his phone was what was playing music. But then I figured out that I could talk to the car and I could get the car to play music for me through his iPod. So I was very scared that like one of my like somebody was gonna wake up and I'm just like whispering to the car like play Nancy Griffin.
Oh yeah.
Very funny. But yeah, no, I mean that makes sense. And dude, like this kind of music is like the perfect night driving music,
Oh yeah. Keeps you
especially
up.
on tour.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah. When you started getting back into like when you started allowing yourself to listen to this kind of music again, was it all just like the classic stuff, or were you into anything that was contemporary at the time, or did you just like go back to what you liked as a kid?
There would be some people, yeah, like obviously like a big one was like Garth Brooks, George Strait. There's some people like another one from Texas. It was like, so I went to high school and it was like kind of a, it was like a farm, like they had like Future Farmers of America and stuff like that. So I had gone to a bunch of like in high school, I would just like, all right, what's everyone doing? They're going to see like Randy Rogers band or something like that. So I would listen to some of those like more Texas people, but for the most part, I really wasn't listening to like radio country or anything like that.
Gotcha. I mean, me either. I like that country radio was
Oh,
never
yeah,
something
no.
that I was exposed to at all as a kid. Like the classic rock stations were about all my parents ever listened to as when I was younger. So it wasn't until I started riding in cars with people that I got exposed to any of this shit.
Yeah. Well, Zane,
Well,
we
yeah.
also have to, before we move on, ask you about Steve Earle being there in
Oh,
San Antonio.
yeah, Guitar Town, Guitar
Yeah,
Town.
Guitar Town. We'll tell, I mean, this is not technically a Steve Earle podcast, but the vast majority of our talking hours have been dedicated to Steve Earle. And that's what, kind of brought me and Tyler together at like, I think that first like realizing like, oh shit, you too.
Oh yeah, and
Was
then
around
Tyler was
Steve.
wearing a Steve Earle shirt at LDB Fest when I saw him, and I was like, dude, that shirt, that's the one right there.
That's what, yeah, man. I mean, our story is Tyler put out my band Perfect World's LP, but we had never met in person. And when we met for the first time in Oklahoma, Tyler had on a Steve Earle shirt, and it was all on from there.
I'm trying to
But
remember. I think I was wearing an I Feel All Right shirt when we met Brian. And then when Zane clocked my Steve Earle shirt, I think I was wearing the Hard Way shirt that I got.
yeah.
Yeah, it only has a pocket print. That is it.
That's
A
nice.
pocket print and a sleeve print. It doesn't make any sense. It's awesome.
Hey,
It's
like,
one of
what
my
else do you
favorite
need?
shirts.
He's playing here next week too,
Dude,
actually.
he played fucking Cincinnati the Sunday after we played Detroit. And I just couldn't fucking like justify getting 3 hours of sleep, working for 4 hours, and then
And going.
driving back
I
to Cincinnati.
know. Yeah, I know. I'm like,
I
no,
mean,
yeah,
dude,
I'm gonna be out of town when he's here, so I was like,
that
ah,
sucks.
but yeah.
Yeah, Tyler, I can relate. That's 100% an age thing. You know what I mean? Like when we were younger,
Yeah.
I would not have thought fucking twice
No.
about like getting
Yeah.
right
Now
back in the
you're
car
like,
and doing that. And now, like thinking
anytime.
about it, I feel nauseous. I'm like, well, I'm gonna be pretty tired, man. I
Well, my thing wasn't even the
don't
tired thing. I was like, if I didn't have to work,
know. Yeah.
if I was off on Sunday, if I like,
Yeah.
we would have just stopped on the way home, like got a hotel, and then I would have gone and.
Then going, you're like, oh man,
Yeah, the
yeah.
idea of driving through Cincinnati in the middle of the night to come home and then turning around and driving back to Cincinnati, I don't know. The world's on fire.
We're getting
Texas
too
is
old for
flooding.
that. We're getting too old for that.
Yeah, for that, definitely. Well, I wanted to ask though, Zane, like, is do you have a favorite Steve Earle record? Would it be Guitar Town, the earlier stuff, or is there anything in particular you like?
Oh yeah, that's probably it. But I was like, my dad would always listen to Copperhead Road like a bunch when I was younger too. So that's another one where I was like, at the time, and you're just like, okay, here we go again. But yeah, that one we would listen to a bunch.
Well, it makes sense if he was l liking a lot of like the harder rock stuff because like
Yeah.
half of Copperhead Road like rips.
Oh, it does.
Which,
Yeah.
By the way, it's the title track is back in a Chevy commercial right now.
really?
I like was literally last night watching baseball and heard it, and just all I kept thinking was like, I wonder how much Steve is making from this. I
Oh,
hope
you know
it's
what?
a
I
lot.
actually knew that. I saw that Chevy commercial the other day too.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty sick.
It's a hit, it's timeless.
Have you ever done like a dive through any deeper into his catalog than just the first few records?
Not, I wouldn't say like super deep, but yeah, I mean, I will listen to it pretty often, but not like an extremely deep dive now.
And say because like if you've never liking Copperhead Road a good amount and being like into the more aggressive music, if you haven't revisited the Hard Way in a while, I would say the Hard Way is definitely like one that like I like a lot because it has like it's the last one he recorded before he went to prison.
Yep.
Yeah.
So like and got sober, so it's like really dark.
It's
Yeah.
dark, it's heavy, it's strung out. It's
Yeah.
perfect. But
Yeah,
yeah, I
it's
mean, I'm glad he got clean when he did, but it he gave us a
good
killer piece of art before.
Yeah, it's definitely like it's a fucked up record in a lot of ways. And then some of like the like I mean his return record is like more folky, which is cool.
Yeah.
And then like as he gets into like the 90s and 2000s, like you can hear him just like trying shit out. Like the bluegrass record he did in 99 is really cool. If you like bluegrass stuff at all, but like
The
I don't
Mountain,
know,
it's
I'm a
called.
fucking Steve Earle evangelist. Anytime any of my friends are like have any affinity for this stuff, I'd like try to figure out what they like and then tell them the Steve Earle record that I think will change them.
And friends, if you'd like a companion as you go back through Steve Earle's back catalog, you can search for any of the Hardcore Troubadour episodes that cover those particular albums.
Yeah, we only have two left to talk about, and then we're I guess doing this more.
This is fun, though. I'm
This
cool
is
with that.
fun. Well,
So,
shit. Do you want to
talk
get into
records?
starting to talk about records? Yeah,
Yeah, let's
Zane.
do it.
So you preambled a little bit. So why did you choose Alan Jackson's Here in the Real World?
Man, it's one of those ones where it's like nostalgic for like a reason I said, because we would listen to this thing anytime I was at my grandma's house. It was always playing. It's got hits, you know, got hits. I don't know. I've always kind of, that was like the main one that like probably got me into more like country music for sure.
Yeah, I my affinity for Alan Jackson was mostly like when I started to get exposed to him because I country radio was just never anything that I had in my
Yeah.
life. Like I said, it was almost a joke. Like
Oh, yeah.
some of his music was like it felt like my friends put it on because it was funny. But then the more I listened to it, I started to realize like, nah, this kind of kicks ass. Like,
Especially the early, I would say like later, the later Alan Jackson. Yeah, I mean, you know, but the earlier ones.
but I'd never listened to this record before.
Oh yeah.
Same.
Like I, yeah, go ahead.
And yeah, I'm fucking glad you picked it. I really like it.
Dude, same. Like I coming into this, I would consider myself like an Alan Jackson appreciator, but very much like I know the singles, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Like I know, and I'm pretty sure my stepdad had like, you know, one of those truck stop greatest hits CDs in his truck, you know, so I could tell you any of those songs, but I don't think I had ever actually sat down and listened to a full Alan Jackson record all the way through. And it was a lot of fun and has made me want to go through several others, especially from, you know, the early 90s stuff when he was really at his peak.
The early ones are definitely the better ones, but
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm going to, I think, start to do the full walk through his records until I can't anymore because my note for this whole record was I felt like it was very in line with like the output of most artists like this of this time,
Yeah.
which is like half good and a quarter great. And then as I listen to it more, I'm like, I think this is half great. Maybe three quarters good. Because I really like it. There's one song I completely changed my opinion on, like from sleepy and bored. The Wanted.
Oh yeah.
It hit me today.
No
And I
shit.
love this song.
It's also just I like that song too, but like it's so in a way that I love. it's so dated. Like I could find myself listening to this with my son just to try to explain, like, well, used to, if you wanted to, you would call somebody at the newspaper and then tell them what they, and then they would charge you some money and then they would put it in the paper. Like it just seems so archaic. And that the fact that he actually like acts out the phone call in the song, it's like so, it feels just so genuine though.
No, dude, and it's that chorus just swells in such a way that like it hit me at work today. I was like, because I was driving home from the gym after work, and I was getting so sleepy the first time I listened to this when I was writing my notes. I was like, I'm getting sleepy for this song, y'all. And then today I was like stocking groceries, and that chorus hit, and I went, this is amazing. This song's incredible. What the fuck is wrong with me?
Stocking groceries, just single tear coming down your eyes, hoping nobody walks by.
Dude, shit's happened so often, dude. I'll hear something, it'll really take me there. I'm like, please, nobody talk to me right now.
Well, Zane, what are your favorite tracks off the
What are your
record?
standouts on this?
My favorite one, I mean, obviously like the chasing that neon rainbow, obviously. One of my,
Earworm. What a fucking earworm.
I mean,
It's in my head right now.
the hits are the hits for a reason, right? That's what I always say.
Like that one's easy, right? But I really like Dog River Blues. That was another one that kind of like you're saying, the first time you hear it, you're like, that's all right. And then you listen again, you're like,
That Dog River's the first time I thought to write this note down, which is, I mean, like one of my immediate impressions from It's 5 o'clock somewhere being like the first Alan Jackson song I heard, and it being played all the time in the van, is how sharp the drums are on that song. And for Dog River Blues, that was the first point where listening to this record, I went, oh, the drum sound on his records are fucking so clean, so sharp, so clear. And it's awesome. Like I really, really like it stood out, and I'm like, oh yeah, okay. That's one of the things I like about Alan Jackson. Now I can really enjoy this even more.
Yeah, man, it's just pro. You know what I mean? Even the songs that are not the ones I would reach for are still like both, you know, production-wise, performance-wise, songwriting-wise, still at a very high level. And I'm glad that you mentioned Dog River Blues, 'cause I wrote like this is to me a perfect like short country song, right? Like the more upbeat songs like shouldn't go on too long. Like what? It's like 2.5 minutes, because the sort of shorter, faster tempoed country songs are at their core punk rock songs, right? Or that's what a punk song is at its core, this, right? So I think that's one of the reasons that it spoke to me. And similarly, like the title track and Chasing the Neon Rainbow, I mean, you know, I'm a very, as Tyler knows, I tend to be a very basic bitch when it comes to things, but like I'll come back to them because I'm like, there's a reason these became hits. They're just masterful songs. One other one that I wanted to talk about, because similar, it didn't grab me the first few times, but I found myself coming back to it, is Blue Blooded Woman.
Oh, it's so fun,
It's
dude.
so fun, and what it made me think is like this is Uptown Girl by Billy Joel that doesn't suck.
No, it's the same energy
It's
for
the same
sure.
energy, but a just a non-corny version of that theme.
Well, because it's written for us. It's written
That's
for a
right.
bunch of Southern boys instead of,
Long Island.
some fucker from Long Island. It did make me wonder though. Have you guys dated rich girls before?
Look at my Zoom name right now.
I mean, I
Okay,
didn't. She put herself through college though with
I know, no,
scholarships.
yeah, that I'm, yeah, I'm totally. I did at one point in college, and it very much didn't work out for a lot of similar reasons. Like we were just couldn't relate in
It
so many
was
ways.
nice having somebody who would buy me dinner all the time, though. I will
Oh,
say that.
for sure.
Especially when I was broke and
You gotta
trying
wait.
on college.
Dude, her dad bought my books one semester. because she told him I didn't have it. Look, I look back on it now and it's like kind of embarrassing, but at the time I was like,
You're
dude,
like, hell yeah.
I was like, beggars can't be choosers, man. I was like,
Exactly.
he did what? Wow, thank you, sir.
Oh man. Yeah, that was one of my thoughts, 'cause I always just try to think about like the how these songs relate to my life. But the sushi Southern Fried line is one of the funniest lines on the
Dude,
whole
yeah.
the record.
Almost every genre of music, or at least, of like popular music, has this kind of song, right? Because we talked about this is Uptown Girl. This is Common People by Pulp. Like all that kind of theme, because I think it just ends up being like so relatable. Like, because if you're fucking cool,
Don't matter.
girls are gonna like you. And even, it won't be until you dig in a little bit deeper that you realize, like, oh yeah, I'm cool because I had to learn to be cool because I don't have shit.
Yeah,
So
I didn't have.
I have to be interesting because I'm not rich.
Dude, one of the things it keeps coming up in conversations with friends about childhood lately, especially video game related, is remembering what it was like when new game systems came out and you would have to strategize with your friends who's gonna get what. Like I'm gonna ask for an Xbox because we can't all get Xboxes, or Tyler's got the Nintendo 64, so nobody else needs a Nintendo 64. We can just go to his house. And like you that was how you had to figure out how to play video games, was like there was none of us are gonna have them all. There's just no way. That's just not how the economy works. But yeah, no, I Blue Blooded Woman really stuck out to me. Brian, what's your favorite song on the record?
My favorite song on the record is Chasing That Neon Rainbow.
Damn. Okay. I think I had you pegged for Dog River Blues, so
Well, it's up there, man.
I
It's
was
probably
close.
top three for me.
What about you, Zane? What is your favorite song on this record?
It would either be, I would say, it's one of those three we just talked about, either Chasing That Neon Rainbow, Dog Water Blues, or what was the last one we just talked about? I already forgot.
Blue Blooded Woman, or
Other woman, yeah, that was the one. Yeah, those three are the ones that they just like stand out to me. They're like the most almost relatable.
She Don't Get the Blues is my favorite song on this
That is good.
record.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
It is so badass. I love that he wrote a song about how this girl is just like, she's just not the one
I'll
who's
get
gonna get bummed out about you. She's gonna
it.
fucking bum you out, dog.
You don't get it.
I thought that shit was cool. I really like it's also like the I think I really liked a lot of the interplay in that song between the relation or like the different instruments. I think there's a playfulness on that song musically that is a dynamic to the rest of them. And then also I think he nails writing about a strong woman in a way that like on his first record, I'm like, wow, all right, impressive, Alan Jackson.
It's really true, and I think that's one of the things, it's particularly talking about the really smart instrumentation. Like, it's one of the things that makes Alan Jackson stand out, because at that point, right, in the early 90s, you've got you've got Garth, you've got Alan Jackson, you've got Travis Tritt, you've got Reba, but there was so much popular country radio that was just like cut and paste. You know what I mean? Like, just it came from a template. And a lot of the listeners, and I say this would be like, my friend's mom that drove me to school, right? So I'd listen to every day in her car. And she just didn't, it was background music for her. You know, she liked
Wasn't really
everything.
listening, just like, oh yeah, this is cool.
But it's just she always had it on. And it makes, going back and like really diving deep into this makes you realize, like, oh yeah, well, Alan Jackson had that staying power because he really was and is a cut above a lot of the other stuff that was out at the time.
Yeah,
Definitely.
there's nothing cringe on this record,
Yeah.
which I was like, anytime I'm listening to like older music like this, especially like I'm like, oh, is there gonna be like a like Charlie Daniels Band is a rough revisit, because like sometimes you're like, oh, that was so racist, Jesus Christ. Like, oh, that's incredibly sexist. Like, yikes. We're not gonna lie. Either you wouldn't get away with that today, or you'd have a specific fan base.
Yes.
Like, and listen to this. I like there would every song I'd be like, is there gonna be something that like that irks me on this or like geeks me out? And I'm like, no, just more respect. That's all I found.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I like especially God, I'm so glad like you picked his first record for this to be the first full Alan Jackson record I listened to because I'm now like yeah, I mean like you I was an Alan Jackson enjoyer and I believe I'm becoming an Alan Jackson fan
No.
because I've listened to this record like 50 times.
Is
So
that, yeah, definitely nothing corny or anything. Like, I mean, when it is corny, it's not like you're saying like
it's
cringe.
fun.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah, like even the corny, like if you think like to certain degrees, like I mean what I Love You All Over Again, it could kind of be it's sappy. It's sappy. I don't think it's cringe.
You gotta have one though. You gotta have one of those, you know.
I think Wanted, I think Home, I think those are sappy songs, but I think yeah, there's a line to draw between sort of a sappiness. And I think maybe it comes from just it feels genuine. Like, I don't know. I feel
I think
like,
Home is very cute. I think it's a very cute song, like about his grandparents. It's very sweet. Even if it's apocryphal, even if it's not his grandparents, even if it's just a fictional,
But I think that's
like.
what I'm saying is I could see another artist put out a song like that and it'd have me like rolling my eyes. But this doesn't
Yes,
do that to me.
exactly. That
Oh,
mustache,
well,
the
you
power
guys
couple.
want to move on to Gillian Welch?
It's a to Zane's point though, that mustache communicated an
Bro,
authority. It
that
said
thing real. Yeah.
folks, you can trust me, and he was right. Let's move on to Gillian Welch, which by the for the feels relevant for the first many, many years that I listened to her, I pronounced it Jillian because you can also say it that way. That is, it is Gillian. She pronounces it with the hard G. I
I
picked.
didn't know you could do that until I heard Gillian Jacobs' name said out loud.
There you
And I was
go.
like, oh shit, you can do that? You can say it like that? Okay.
I think I mean, it was actually like the, I think it was the first time I saw her and David Rawlings play, and she introduced herself, and I was like, oh, I never knew.
How many times did you said her name out loud to other people before that?
A ton. But I think thankfully I was in like company that was the same as me and would have had no other way of knowing.
I don't know if I've ever told this story before. Sorry, before you get into Gillian Welch. Paul, one of the people who got me like more hooked on Steve Earle than I was before. His favorite band in middle school, and then he got to high school where he could meet other people who also liked that band. And then he said his favorite band to another classmate, NOFX. Tough.
Oh God.
Tough. That was certainly followed with a lot of roasting.
It happens, man.
Yeah,
Hey, you
it's
know,
before the internet, like
I yeah.
really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
How are we
you
supposed to know?
nobody's gonna tell you how to say NOFX.
Wow, his favorite band was NOFX. Weird.
NOFX, yeah.
I mean, I guess that's the case for a lot of people. Well, let's talk about Gillian Welch. Yeah, so I picked Hell Among the Yearlings, which is her second record. I don't remember the exact point, but I first heard Gillian at some point in college, and I know the first record I heard was Time the Revelator, which was the album she put out after this. So that one came out in 2001 when I was in college, and I went backwards. And to Revival, her first record, and Hell Among the Yearlings, and both of those really got me floored. And I think one of the reasons I picked this record, I mean, as Tyler knows, a lot of the country stuff that tends to be like my absolute favorite tends to be the really dark stuff. Me and my friend Brian Hartley used to joke about Southern goth. Like that's what, you know, it would be like, oh yeah, we like Gillian Welch because she's Southern goth. It's all murder ballads and, you know, stuff like that. But I think I've been going back to her a lot lately and realizing too that, wow, like it's been a long time. This record came out in 98. I still I still really love it. And so after Tyler told me, Zane, that you were picking Here in the Real World, because we kind of try to divvy up the time periods, I decided to take this one. And I feel like on this podcast we've made passing mention of Gillian Welch a
We
couple of
talked about her
times,
quite
but
a
we,
bit.
her and
You've
she
talked
and
about her quite a bit. I've only ever listened to Soul Journey. That's the only record I'd
yeah.
ever really checked out.
But I was also thinking too, because another like ongoing theme on our podcast has been how banjos usually kind of annoy me. But not when Gillian plays it. She plays a clawhammer banjo and I love it. And like if you have a chance, I mean, they still tour, not as much, but they still play together. She and most of the time when she plays, it's just her and David Rawlings accompanying her. And like the guitar playing is just, if you geek out on people that can really fucking shred, like it's worth seeing just for that, because the man knows his way around an acoustic guitar and he harmonizes with her voice so well in a way that's really haunting. So yeah, wanted to share this record with y'all and see what you think.
What was your relevance for Gillian Welch, Zane? Did you have any?
I really honestly, I was like, I've heard the name. I never really have listened to the full, like a full album by her. And I was like, you're saying, like Southern Goth, like, yeah, it was a lot more darker than I thought it would be. But yeah, dude, that it has like the banjo on it you were talking about. It's good. Yeah, one of my favorite ones off that. Well, I think it was like I'm Not Afraid to Die, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, that one's good. Yeah. I mean, obviously the whole album was really like really dark, really good though, but that one I really liked. And then I think it's the Devil Has a Hold of Me, right?
Yeah.
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 Those were my two, like, oh, I was like, oh yeah, we're listening to this one again.
Those two songs specifically for me, I think because of how I've heard Gillian Welch's name so often, I expected more pop sensibility, and
Yeah,
it's
that's
just
same.
traditional folk music.
Yes.
Like, I think I expected more pop sensibility. So like going like that was my thought into in the Devil's Got a Hold of Me, or Devil Had a Hold of Me. I was like, man, this is like way more traditional folk music than I
Yeah.
expected it to be for how popular she is and how much like I've heard like chatter about her. I was kind of impressed that people had like this I don't know, I guess eclectic of taste, that this was something that found purchase.
Yeah,
You
and
know
I
what I mean?
for sure, and I think there was something too, like, because these first two records, I don't think were not immensely popular when they came out. They were very much just like in sort of, deeper country and bluegrass and folk circles where people following it. And then I think T-Bone Burnett, the old Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack, like that stuff come in pretty soon after this. And T-Bone Burnett produced this album. And I think there was just around that time a pretty big explosion of a lot of, he had been making this kind of music and producing this kind of music for a very long time. And I think, I mean, we could do an entire deep dive on this soundtrack to Oh Brother Where Art Thou.
Really, I mean, it's
Ended
worth
up,
talking about because
yeah.
it changed the taste of American music
Right.
in
Yes, yes.
connection to folk music at the
Right. It
time.
brought a lot of this kind of stuff to a much wider audience that it just would not have had previously. And I think too, to Gillian's credit, I mean, she is a versatile songwriter. So in the many years since this, she's written a lot of lighter, poppier songs that have gotten, more popular. She's got a lot of stuff that's been on movie soundtracks, et cetera. But like these first few records, it was like, this is how
It's
she
raw.
started. It's raw goth stuff, and I'm, yeah, like I've, you mentioning I'm Not Afraid to Die. I've often been like, would it be too much to ask if this was played at my funeral? But
No.
I'll the opening track I always come back to, because I also have a very vivid memory of the first time I saw Gillian play live in Jackson, Mississippi. Not a huge show. I mean, not tiny, but maybe probably like 80 people there at a club called Howl and Mouse. And I went with a friend of mine from school, just because we had heard Gillian, we liked her, and we're like, she's playing here, let's go. She opened with Caleb Meyer, which I had not heard this record at this point. I had only heard her later stuff. And it was like my jaw was on the floor
This is
because
a twisted song.
it's a twist. Yeah, it's basically like, yep, this, where's your husband? He's not here. Oh, like, man tried to rape me and then I killed him with a bottle. And you know, so in hardcore parlance, we would say she fucking came out swinging because that's what she did right there. So I was hooked from there, and it's just I always use the word haunting, but I think I really
It
dig that
applies
kind of
here.
shit.
Yeah. It applies here. And that song for sure. Like, I think when I, the, it was maybe like the second or third listen where I was like, oh God.
Like,
like dawned on me what's going on in this song. I was like, oh
yeah, and just
no.
or the, like the vivid language, like her, the way she reaches back for the bottle feels, and after she slices his neck, feels the blood like on her, like it's so graphic, but
It's
and
hard.
powerful,
It's a hard track. My favorite song is the song that is completely different from all the other ones. And you want to take a swing at which one it could be?
Is it? Is it Rock of Ages?
Nah, it's Honey Now.
Honey Now,
It's fun.
it's fun. But it does not fit at all
It
with the
does
rest
not
of the
fit at
record.
all. It is my favorite song because I think because it stands out so much. Like, it's the only song I think with electric guitar. Yeah, it's really cool and it's catchy and sassy and badass, and I really liked it. And it's and it amidst so much depressing shit on this record, that was the one that, like, every time it came on, I was like, oh, thank God.
You're
And
like,
then right into I'm Not Afraid to Die, I'm like right back to the depressive shit.
I also want to. Oh, go ahead, Zane.
Oh no, I was like the it sets I'm Not Afraid to Die up even harder,
It
right?
really does, man.
It's a dark turn.
I also just want to shout out Miner's Refrain because I mean it is not in a not an original thought by any means, like the amount of like mining songs, but I think the thing that she lands for me is like, well, I was listening to this with my wife actually the other day, and like what's so powerful is like her line is about like, even if you don't work underground, you're still down in a deep dark hole. And she was like, geez, that is dark. She was like, is that how you think about Tennessee? And I'm like, yes. But yeah, man.
That's really
Fun,
funny. Is
fun
so
record.
does that make Caleb Meyer your favorite song?
Yeah, I just it is she, like I said, she just comes out like goddamn. So
That
yeah.
makes sense to me. One of the songs that I had pegged for possibly one of your favorites is that Good Till Now song.
Yeah.
Which I don't know, because that's definitely a song about killing yourself too.
That's a song about
I'm
killing
sorry.
yourself.
I'm
I
sorry,
mean,
Brian.
there's the morphine song. There's
Yeah.
also, I don't think I had realized one morning I listened to for many years and didn't think much of it. And now I realize it's like it's her son's corpse being sent on horseback back to her house. Like,
That's dark. I
yeah,
don't
like
think that
it's
clocked
like
for
one
me.
morning she's like, you know, out in the garden or whatever, and she sees a horse coming over the hill, and it's her son is on the horse dead. Yeah, just she you know, she's a troubled young woman.
Dude, speaking
Definitely.
of my morphine, I had one funny thought during that. Said I wrote, this is really taking me back to sitting on floors listening to a girl play guitar sitting next to a white kid with dreadlocks.
Which Zane, I don't know if you know, Tyler used to do that quite a lot.
I was a folk punk attender.
His bike was indeed a pipe bomb.
I had that sticker on my skateboard.
Yes. Clever.
I
That's
thought that
clever.
was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Man, yeah, no, thanks for picking this, Brian, because it really wasn't like that good for me until about 4 or 5 days ago. I started to like really be able to differentiate the songs from one another, and I found a lot of things that I liked about it.
I appreciate that. At first, I thought you were being like, this was very damaging to my mental health and very unpleasant. And I.
Oh, I did have one thought, because and I don't know, I don't know, Zane, how you were brought up, because I wasn't, I'm a godless heathen, and was brought up with like no religion whatsoever. But do you guys like Rock of Ages had me thinking about this. People get like the Rock of Ages tattooed on them that I'm like, I've never heard you talk about being Christian.
Oh, all the time. I see that all the time.
People be
Yeah.
getting
I didn't
like,
know that was like a popular
and people get
tattoo.
like Jesus with the crown of thorns, and I'm like, I've never heard you even speak of being Christian. People be getting Christian like imagery tattoos all the time. I'm like, you're gonna give up that real estate for something that like I've never heard you express an interest in. Like, I'm not saying like you
That's
like,
fascinating.
this feels strange to me.
Because I'm the exact opposite. Like, I have no gods, no masters tattooed on my leg, but I'm like, like a closet Christian, you know what I mean? Like, I love Jesus shit. That's really funny. I don't think
Yeah,
I've encountered
I don't
or
know if you guys, I guess it's just my friends, and I guess Zane's seen it too.
yeah, the Rock of Ages, I've seen that a bunch. It
Well, a
really
lot of the people I know that have that stuff had a very explicit like Christian hardcore past or something, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I'm like, hey, I get strong arm rules, I'll give you that. But
You've said it on this podcast many times.
I Advent of a Miracle holds up, dude. I fuck with that record. I fuck with which that Zao record, Blood Where Blood and Fire Bring Rest.
Yes,
Dude, that's
yes,
killer. Me, you know, the first time me and Brendan, the singer from Incendiary, bonded over anything, it was over that fucking Zao record. And people were around like, what are you talking about? I'm like, dude, you haven't heard this. Yeah.
that's some real old guy shit.
Also, just production wise, because the late 90s was such a fascinating time in hardcore and metalcore, because you had so much classic stuff, and some of it you'd listen to, and it would be like, oh, this is like heavy as fuck, sounds like it could have come out today.
Today,
And
yeah.
some stuff, the songs are still incredible, but it sounds like it was recorded on a boombox. Like,
Yeah.
like the variation in sound quality and for like hardcore and metalcore records was so all over the place at that time period. And those records, I mean, maybe it was because they had church money, I don't know, but like those records, like production wise, are really good.
Dude, did you know that people figured out recently that all of the churches having hardcore shows in the 90s was a calculated effort by the church to try to bring in youth.
Yeah.
Like, it was like a, it wasn't just like a churches were being cool thing. It was a deliberate move to like, in all of those, like the Tooth and Nail and stuff, all that stuff was subsidized to like, to completely like AstroTurf Christianity and punk rock music.
It both
Wouldn't have been there otherwise.
tooth and nail, and I mean, I guess I think later he joined up with Tooth and Nail, but Takehold Records out of Birmingham, which is what started Furnace Fest. The first go around was like same thing. And I remember it being like, it was a big deal. I went to some show in Birmingham, 99, 2000. And there had been a big deal because somebody had booked Indecision at one of these places, who were like explicitly an atheist
Bible
band.
burners, yeah.
Yeah. But they had the singer for one of the bands who, also was like a youth pastor or whatever, got up and was like, hey, like giving some speech about basically like, Jesus hanging out with sinners or whatever, and said something about like, if your faith is so weak that you can't even be in the room when somebody that you disagree with is here, what does that say about you? And I'm like, I actually found that kind of refreshing, because I
Yeah.
feel like a lot of people didn't act that way, but I still,
Well, and
who
that's
knows?
like my thing. I was like for years wondering, like, man, why do we not have shows at churches anymore? Why is that not a thing anymore? And I'm like, oh, because it was like a deliberate effort for them to do that and get youth
Right.
in. And
Or if
then, but then hearing things like that, I'm like, clearly not everybody got the memo that this was like a scam, and some people like took this and grew with it,
yeah, some
grew to
people.
be more open-minded.
Well, and it's fascinating, like what kinds of, I mean, because there's still lots of shows that like, like First Unitarian in Philly, but that's not like an evangelical
No.
like kind of church, you know what I mean? It's a different thing. I also remember it's a funny memory I have in some parts of the country, like that was just the only all ages place you had. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? Like there might not be a VFW that was amenable to shows, but there was like a church fellowship hall, and it tended to be as long as you had at least one Christian band or like one kid who was somehow affiliated with the church. That was cool because I think I've told you this, Tyler. It's like a funny slash semi embarrassing story about being a dick when I wasn't trying to be a dick. So one band I was in that was then, we played in Ocala, Florida, and it was in a church. And a new band opened the show. That new band was called A Day to Remember. This was their first or second show, and the singer of my band called them A Walk to Remember. Again, like not trying to be a dick. He just didn't like that was like an honest mistake, but they took great offense at that. And like we had words with each other outside of like the church fellowship hall, you know. So I'm like, joke's on me all these years later.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome though that you own them.
Oh, for
I
sure.
mean, that
Like,
movie had to have been recently out as
yeah,
well
dude,
too. So that would,
we
that's
were all thinking about Mandy Moore. Like, it wasn't an insult. I was
who
like,
wouldn't be thinking about Mandy Moore?
Exactly.
She still looks great.
She does.
She
She does.
does. She's
And
aged incredibly well.
she's also really tall. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah,
No, but now my dreams are squashed.
I know, dude. I took her. I went on a no. I went a few months ago, man. I went to the Transit Museum in Brooklyn. I took my son, and Mandy Moore was there with her kids and husband, and she was cool. She took pictures with people, and
That's
she's
so
like 6 inches taller than me. So I was like,
That's
hello.
awesome. That's awesome. That's awesome, little boy.
She patted me on the head.
Oh my God.
Oh, very good. Well, shit.
Let's
Well,
talk about
speaking of cool
Margot.
chicks, you want to talk about Margo Price?
Let's do it. Let's
Who is
do
not tall? She is very small. She is a tiny person. I did not realize how small she was, and then the first time I saw her, she would, I guess, climb down with the crowd and do a cappella Janis Joplin's Mercedes-Benz, and she was standing right next to me in the crowd doing it, and I could have patted her on the head.
I'm glad you didn't. That probably wouldn't have been well
I didn't. She
received.
did trip into me though and grabbed my shirt. Because she was on these wearing these
Wow.
crazy heels, so it was a very
Wow.
shocking moment for a
So you
second.
sh you shoved her off. Fucking.
If I would have hit her with the whoop, she would have gone she would have gone flat on her fucking face. Which would have been pretty cool. That would have been a better story. But yeah, I picked this record because I've honestly thought about picking this record every single time we've done one of these episodes. Because it's one of my favorite records of like the last like 5, 10 years.
Well, I'm glad you did.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, had you guys heard this shit before?
I've actually seen her before, and I didn't even like put the two and two together till I
Really?
was listening to it, and I was like, oh my God, I know who this is now. Yeah.
Where'd you see her?
There's this place, the singer from Bitter End, he works at the Daniel, he works at this place called John Floor's Country Store. And it's a country venue in Helotes, which is like right outside of San Antonio. And it's like for country music, it's like legendary almost. It's like Willie Nelson used to play there like every week back in the day. But yeah, that was a place like I said, like in high school, and we would like, well, what are we doing? Let's go here because there's always people playing. And I had seen her, I think it was like 2017, so it's been a while, but.
Damn, that's
That's
awesome.
sick. Yeah, because I was like,
So
listen, I
she
was
was
like,
probably playing a lot of these songs, honestly.
yes, because that's why I was like, dude, I swear to God, this name sounds so familiar. I don't remember why. And then I was listening to it and I was like, oh, you know what? I have seen her
Were you
before.
just there hanging out and she happened to be playing that night?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, no, they've been had the that venue has a lot of pretty like really good concerts, so. They'll have
That's
like
awesome.
every year they'll have Willie Nelson will have like his little fest and he'll play there for like a weekend and it's for him it's small, so it's like
I was gonna say, what's the cap there? Like a couple
think
hundred?
no, it's like five it's outside. It's like 5,000
Okay.
probably,
Oh,
but
okay.
yeah,
Oh,
it's
wait. So wait, no, this is the place where Willie Nelson has his thing.
It's one, yeah. Well, he has a couple, but like this,
Because there
he
was like a thing that we looked into one of the times when we were talking about Willie Nelson, remember? And like there was like a lot of fucked shit that happened with like it not being like securitied correctly and there
Am I?
being like
I don't
some
remember this.
we did like a whole wiki dive while we were recording an episode and we were like, holy shit, Willie Nelson like almost got a bunch of people killed.
Oh yeah. Oh, this is when I made you listen to Redheaded Stranger.
Yes, this was
Yeah.
when you made us listen to Redheaded Stranger. And it felt like you'd pulled some trick.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
Willie's not one for rules and.
Yeah, no, and that was really what it was like clearly like he it was a very much like a Woodstock situation. Like he booked this thing and just had no clue that it was gonna be like
I
that
might
many people showing
not, like,
up.
I don't know if 99. Yeah.
When was it? Do you know when it
I can't
was?
remember. It was whatever, because it was, I think this possibly whatever you're talking about in this being where Willie does it now, he did it somewhere else before, and
Okay.
it was not like equipped to deal with what
What
it
was
was.
going
I think he
on?
was
Yeah.
basically doing it in like a public park sort of situation.
Oh, okay.
And
Yeah.
then
Crowds are
like
just out of control.
in crowds and alcohol and sun and fireworks and all kinds of things like that colliding to being like a
Sounds like
huge
Texas.
mess.
Sounds
I think a lot of
like
sexual assault happened, just like Woodstock 99. Yeah, not great. But yeah, that's crazy though. Would it have been just like a small show that she played there, or was it like a
Yeah,
big thing?
it wasn't. I don't think it was too big. I remember it was outside, so it was big-ish, but it wasn't like sold out like to the brim or anything like that.
Gotcha. Is that does that venue work when there's not that many people there too, or
Yeah,
is
they have
it?
a. It's kind of like almost like a hardcore venue. They have like a huge outside and then like a small inside.
Okay. That's
Yeah, it's
cool.
awesome.
Well, that's
Yeah.
sick. Had you ever listened to this shit before, Brian?
Not this full record. I knew several Margo Price songs. I think one is just because, frankly, whenever I'm in the mood to let Spotify just play music for me, they play.
Yeah.
She's somebody that they play just because it's related to so much other shit I listen to. Also, I remember randomly seeing her on Saturday Night Live and being like,
Oh.
she's great. I think it was after this, like as she's gotten more popular. But like interestingly enough, I will own like being a Pose Dog and being like, oh, I really liked this, and then not going and like actually checking out the records or anything after that. So this was my first actual like full sit down with a Margo Price record.
What do you think?
I liked it.
It's fucking good.
It's good.
I think this is a perfect record, honestly.
I don't think it's a perfect record, but I think it is very good.
There's only honestly like one song on this record that I like almost lose, and I still like it. And the more I listened to it every time, I was like, nah, this song doesn't have to go. This song's fine.
Well,
This record does have the song I think she will be remembered for on it.
which one?
Hurtin' on the
Hurting
Bottle.
on the Bottle. That was like, that has to be it.
I was gonna say that was my favorite song off this one.
She played that on SNL. There's a good, I think you can, get the video on YouTube. It's very good.
The
It's
fact
one
that
of,
she did this on her first record is pretty crazy.
man, you know what? It is pretty crazy. As I listen to it, several times in preparation to talk about it, like one thing that I kept coming back to is like there's so much Waylon Jennings in here.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
But
yeah.
both the phaser on the electric guitar and some of her delivery, like it meant when I listen to Hurtin' on the Bottle, I'm like, man, how cool would it have been if he was still around and
Still
they could have
around,
done
yeah.
a they
Yeah.
could have done some sick collaboration.
Well, she's got a great song with Willie on, I think, her next record that is really, really dope. But yeah, no, that's cool. Even if she was on Saturday Night Live later, that's cool that she still has to play this song
Yeah.
in that kind of situation.
It's
It is a hit. Yeah, I think like legit it will be the song she is always known for, whether she likes it or not.
Yeah.
4 Years of Chances is my favorite song on this record. It's got so much dynamism or whatever the fuck. Like it go from soft to hard to like. And it's got so much attitude too. I think it's so cool. And I too have been dating a girl for a very long time without marrying her, and I'm just wondering
Same.
how much time I got left here.
Same.
Couldn't be me.
Yeah, no, not you.
The shotgun was out. No.
Yeah, no, I think yeah, I think this record's just incredibly well recorded too. It's awesome. I think this is the first Margo Price I listened to whenever I got into her. And again, it was just like I heard her name and I was just like, I guess I'll start at the first one.
You
She
know
only had
what's,
two out at the time whenever I started listening to her.
yeah, man. And you know what's fascinating is like her voice is so simple. And like I don't mean that as like an insult, right? It's like she clearly can sing well, but she doesn't try to do too much. And I think it really like complements it. Like, you know, like it's not far from her speaking voice. She doesn't put on an accent. Like, you know, like this is how she sounds. And it kind of it was a little bit jarring at first, but in a way that I actually like came to really love. Also, on like my I never listen as much as you do, Tyler, but on probably maybe my like fifth or sixth listen, I came to appreciate the track This Town Gets Around so
It's
much.
awesome, dude.
But because I
Like,
like the theme for me, and this especially as a native of Memphis, I come back to this like even the people who love Nashville fucking hate Nashville. You know what I
yeah.
mean? Because like you can even find those similar kinds of themes in like Steve Earle's lyrics, right? Where it's, you know, like I needed this place to
But
do
it's
what I've done, but also I met so many fucking shitheads like while I was trying to like, you know, get my music out and make a career in country music. It's just really well done.
you bringing up that song reminded me, one of my thoughts on this record is this whole record is so much fuck you.
Oh yeah.
Almost
Yeah.
every song on this record is a fuck you song. Like Hands of Time, fuck you song. About to Find Out, fuck you song. I
Not
don't know if
Tennessee song. No.
Tennessee's a celebration.
Yeah.
Since You Put Me Down, fuck you song. 4 Years of Chances, fuck you song. This Town Gets Around, fuck you song. How the Mighty Have Fallen, fuck you song. The Weekender's kind of a fuck you to jail song.
It's fuck you too. I kind of fucked myself.
Yeah. Hurtin' on the Bottle's a fuck you song. And Desperate and
I
Depressed is a
wanted to,
fuck you song.
I love the closer. I love Desperate and Depressed as a closer.
She still plays that song too.
That's great.
I've seen when I'm trying to think. I think I've seen her twice, and she's played it both times differently. Both times, one time was just her playing it by herself, and the other time she played it with the full band. Yeah, I think Desperate and Depressed like is a really good closer for this record too, because it kind of takes the entire record into consideration. It's a very intentional record. I don't know. I'm very impressed that like looking back on this after hearing her evolution, because even like thinking about that first time seeing her and her doing that Janis Joplin cover, even if it's just like her a cappella doing Mercedes-Benz, listening to this, I'm like, I can hear how much influence Janis Joplin has on her. Especially, I think what you're talking about, like her voice, like it's not trying to be anything other than what it is. And then into their modern. Into like her modern music now, which I mean, she's kind of like not just her, it's the whole band. But it's way more like Fleetwood Mac. Like it's a lot of Stevie Nicks influence in her shit now. And I just think it's, I don't know, it's a really like logical like evolution for her sound. And I just think she's consistently put out good music. Like and she was really nice. I met her the second time I saw her and talked to her for a second, and she was cool.
That always helps.
Definitely.
Very short lady. I'll say that.
You keep bringing it up, man.
Was so much smaller than I thought she was going to be, man.
How short is she?
Like, gotta be, like, maybe 5 foot tall.
Oh,
Maybe. She might be less.
and look how she commands a stage.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was your Hurtin' on the Bottle is your favorite song, Zane?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
There was an, let me see the other one I had written down. Yeah, I like Hands of Time. That was a good one. The Desperate and Depressed also. That was those were by three. I think I,
I feel
yeah.
like Hands of Time is like a really good example of those songs about like how much like this like how hard it is to live in like rural America in the modern time. Like it just is not possible
No,
to
yeah.
live the way that the people lived when they built those houses, like
Oh,
when they settled that land. Like it's just you can't. It's too. It's just not possible. Like the bank will come and take your shit.
yeah.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Like they will come and take your shit because your land is needs to belong to a big factory farming corporation or some sort of like large landowner. Like that is not okay.
What, like, this is her first record, and Tyler, like, being a fan, like, is this your favorite, or are there others that you would put above it now?
You know, I really don't know because every record has like a significant amount of like there. Even like the new one, like or one of the newer ones, because there's one that just came out that I have not gotten into yet. I'm pretty sure because she's okay. She's got a couple singles out recently. Oh yeah, no. It's just like a like I guess like a different kind of version of her last record, Strays. Which Strays is one I haven't dug into that much, but the That's How Rumors Get Started, which is the one before that. I didn't care for too much because I listened to it a few times. I saw her the week it came out. The first time I saw her. And I knew like a couple of the songs for to hear them when she played them live. And then by the time I saw her next time, I was like, "Oh no, this record is belongs. It's canon, just as good as the other ones." But yeah, this might be, even though I think her second record is, you know, almost or just as good. It's probably got a few too many songs, I would say. I think this one's more concise. Yeah, I would say this probably is my favorite one. Just pound for pound,
Yeah, I
but
thought this was a perfect length. Like, you know, I don't. Yeah,
but
I.
her sophomore record's awesome, and it's got like it's got a song that the song with Willie Nelson's on that record. She has an awesome song on that record about it's called Pay Gap, and it's about the gap that women and men are paid. That is. It's the this town gets around on that record. Like
Yeah.
it just exposes the kind of music industry in the ugly kind of way it is. And I think that's one thing I really like about her. And I've seen like anytime I saw her like on TV or and whatnot, she's very unapologetically like honest about what it's like to be a professional musician right now and be a woman in that world and not in like a, you know, I should be treated differently in a I should just be treated the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it's I don't know. It's very I don't know, whatever. Like she's very no nonsense in a way that I think it comes through in her music a lot.
Well, she probably has to be because motherfuckers are always talking about how short she is, and so.
Right. You can't let it go. You can't let it just
But
go.
I will say, like, it's just cool to see. She's clearly. As I like go back and think about the lyrics and like some of my favorite parts, like it's such a good response to clearly having people like project things onto her, right? Because I think there could probably be this world where it's like, oh, you're a soft spoken singer, you've got a pretty voice, you're from the Midwest, you've come to Nashville to like try to make it in country music. What, you know, what sort of template should we put you into? And that's who you can be. And you know, it says a lot. Yeah, I mean, she's got a lot of Steve Earle in her, right? Like in
No.
that both being able to sort of like play that game, but also put out the songs that she wants to put out.
Yeah, no, and I mean with the jump from and I don't know then also like how much like labels are like, oh yeah, wait, you want to go like more like pop oriented? Like go for it. Like you know, like maybe we'll make more money rather than like, oh, you want to do something different than the thing that is clearly working right now? Like I'm curious, like which thing is, if she was, if it was a supportive move for her to write more like, I don't know, adventurous kind of music, or if she was taking a risk on n not just her fans, but also the label or how supportive that stuff was. I don't know. I will say I've seen her twice. Like, it really seems like the people who like her music are on board for all of it, because nobody like walked out in the middle of anything,
Hell yeah.
which I've seen happen to Steve Earle once.
Wow.
Well, a lot of that's more,
Yeah.
it's the
I was impressed the guy with the MAGA hat lasted that long, honestly.
Oh my God.
It's the people who like tag Tom Morello and are like, "What? Well,
What?
I liked Rage Against the Machine before you got all political. What are you talking about?" Like,
Keep
insane.
politics out of it. I love that shit, dude. I love all the lately, I mean, speaking of Steve Earle and his Revolution Starts Now being in the Andor trailer, but all the people talking about Star Wars right now, like I like Oh my God.
when politics weren't in my Star Wars, and it's like, brother, it's always been there. Like, are you kidding
It's
me?
like
Star Wars.
he said explicitly that he wrote it about the Viet Cong, man. Like it
Yeah.
that
Oh
rules.
man, it's so funny, dude. Yo, speaking of the like going like stupid Star Wars and whatnot, Caleb Meyer, the song really made me think about, there is a scene in the new season of Andor where a sexual assault happens and the girl fucking kills the guy, and it is brutal. It is just as brutal as the song.
Wouldn't
It's
it be
awesome.
something if they if that song was part of the inspiration for
It could
writing that
have
scene?
been, because like the guy gets hit in the head so hard, and it is the best head injury as a head injury
Enthusiast.
enthusiast. It is the best on-screen ex like representation of what it's like having been hit in the head so hard that you are just disoriented completely, just fucked up. Like, he's almost looks like he's dying from the head injury before something happens to him worse. It's awesome.
That rules.
Yeah, well worth it.
Shout out Endor. Yeah, I've read stuff. I haven't watched any of it, but I've read a lot of stuff about people being like, "Huh, this is making me kind of think differently about that whole Gaza thing." And I'm like, "Yeah,
Definitely, right?
yeah." I'm
Oh
glad
man.
people are making the connection. Dude, these were awesome records, and I just want to thank both of you because, again, like, it's given me an excuse to. One, dig deeper into someone like Alan Jackson that I've known for forever, but have not
Yeah.
really actually, given listens to full albums. And yeah, this also was my motivation to like actually do a deeper dive on Margo Price. So
Same,
yeah.
mean, that's the reason I wanted to do these episodes, is the reason I wanted to have friends on the podcast every now and then, is because the best way to listen to music is when your friend puts you onto it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Like, 'cause now every time I listen to this Alan Jackson record, I'm gonna think about my friend Zane.
Dude, it's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same, yeah.
Like, having those connections, like, make, I don't know, they make music so much more enjoyable and so much more well worth it. And thank you, Zane, for being down to come on. Like,
Oh, of course, guys, of
yeah, man.
course.
I
Thank you
think
for
we're going to
having
do more episodes like this, so we might start looping around and talking to people who've been on again
me. Oh, yeah,
before.
if you ever do, let me know. We'll come up, we'll dig in the archive and find some good
Yes.
stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Is there
Dudes.
anything you want to talk about or leave the listeners with before we hop off here?
I mean, not really. I mean, not come. Trying to. Uh-oh. I'm
Now we
getting
hear the children.
perfect timing.
I'm getting calls. I'm getting summoned.
Well, this is.
My assistants are looking for me.
Well,
Yeah,
that's great timing. That Z dude Zane. It was a fucking pleasure, man. So
you guys,
glad.
awesome. Thank you again for having me. It was
Thank you,
awesome.
Zane. This was so much fun.
Let's do it again soon. Uh-oh.
Yes,
They're
let's do
coming.
it again. All right.
Awesome, guys.
All right. Take
Thank you.
care.
Later, guys.
Peace.